Tape of an interview between Alyssa Nielsen and Betty Ramshaw, and it's taking place on Saturday, November 12th, 2005. And this tape is actually going to consist of, Betty's going to read from a story that she's written, and this story has quite a history, actually. It was published, is that correct, Betty?
Yes, in the newspaper, yeah.
In the newspaper, and you've read it in front of Sedit.
No, I read it in front of Jack Reed, the senator, Jack Reed, at a regimental reunion. He asked for a copy. He had it read in the Senate, and then I received 8 letters from different senators suggesting I get it published.
Wow, okay.
So
we've decided to read this on tape because we were going to originally include it with the collection, but Betty feels that it would be more powerful if she read it on tape. And I agree with that. So I'm just going to pass this over to you, and you can just read your story now.
Okay. Oh, Canada, my holy native land. But you were not always my native land. I find myself remembering time when God Save the Queen, Land of Hope and Glory, these were melodies that stirred my very soul and still do. No, Canada, you were not always my native land. I didn't want to come here. I didn't even know you were here. And I can't say I knew anyone else who knew you were here. But now you're my pride, my country. My roots are here, and they go deep. The war was over. We had won. Victory was ours. Troops were returning to their homelands. Life was returning to normal. I was still working in a factory making uniforms. There had been no halt to culture production yet, and I was 20 years of age. The army barracks at the Headley, a small town 5 miles away, was having its weekly dance. As usual, Mary Smith, Violet Kearns, and yours truly decided we should go. After all, once the boys went home, there would be no more dances at the barracks, and the excitement of having 10 men to every girl would be a thing of the past. It was the usual dance, the bar at one end of the hall along the wall, smoke hanging in the air. Everybody smoked in those days. It was so sophisticated. But this dance changed my life forever. One of the soldiers billeted at the camp had been in the Wagon and Horses, a local pub in Hadley, getting himself nicely intoxicated. He attached himself to a Canadian trooper, also getting drunk, and as drunks will, they became bosom buddies. The English soldier, wishing to share his barracks with his newfound friend, invited him back to the dance. Of course he would come. He'd love to. They wove their bleary-eyed way across the dance floor towards me. I have a way of attracting drunks and other wild things. I knew they were all mine, and I went as fast as I could in the other direction. I hated drunks, but I was not fast enough. I was caught in a pair of arms, and a man with a smiling face and the fastest pair of legs I've ever known whirled me onto the dance floor. There was no escape. He hopped and twirled and grinned to the music. When the dance ended, and we headed back to our seats, this stranger informed me, "I am going to marry you." I thanked him politely. But I must have been too polite, because no matter how hard I tried, I could not get rid of him. We danced again and again. And as the night wore on, he sobered up. They were selling raffle tickets for a chicken, and we bought 2. I think they were 6 pence each. And yes, guess what? We won it. The couple with the most 8s. We had number 8 and 88. Well, one thing left to another. He came to dinner. He did, after all, own 1/2 of the chicken. We fell in love, and within 8 weeks we were married in the little Saxon church of St. Peter's in the county of Essex on December 22, 1945. On the 18th of January, 1946, my new husband was on his way back to Canada. After he left, my life went on its usual way. I went to work. I wrote letters every day. But before long, my wedding and my new husband became a pleasant dreamlike memory. The weeks passed. I had written to different boys all through the boy years, and soon my husband was just one of the boys. Memories fade fast when you're young. And then the bubble broke. It was in June of 1946 when the letter came from the Canadian Embassy. Those unseen controllers of my fate, whose sole purpose was to remind me of my duty, dragged me back to reality. I was going to have to leave England. The letter stated I would be leaving from Southampton on the SS Aquitania on the 26th of July, 1946. It was too soon. I had known this was going to happen, but like Scarlett O'Hara, I preferred to think about it tomorrow. Truthfully, I had not dared to let myself think about it. My two brothers were home now and demobilized. They had never met Art. I couldn't understand why they were so interested in Canada. I certainly wasn't. I had been married 5 months and had never looked at a map, but they did. Did you know Canada is pink? Saskatchewan. Now that was funny. We practiced spelling it. See, they chuckled, that's where you're going. Note the extreme climate. More laughter. What were they talking about? And what was so funny? I was full of unshed tears. The enormity of what I had done was beginning to penetrate my consciousness. My life was going to change, and there was nothing I could do about it. Where was the sympathy? Did I deserve any? I should have thought about what I was doing. The responsibility was mine. I had made my decision in December. It was assumed I was aware of the consequences. No one gave me the comfort I was seeking. I know now my family didn't think I needed any. I didn't want to leave. My God, I'd forgotten what he looked like. There was planning to be done, letters to write, a farewell party for my friends at work, go to London to buy a trunk and a new suitcase. Art assured me I would be able to buy clothes in Canada. Mum bought me a warm winter coat for the winter. There was so much to do and so many pictures to store. Green trees, my church. Summer rain, my beloved family. I tried to store it all. My beautiful England, how could I bear to leave you? It was hard to sleep and hard to eat. Dear God, I prayed, help me. I was only 20 years old and had made a commitment before God to love and follow a man I could barely remember. My brothers were very concerned that the man I had married would be no good. I was their only sister, and I would be miles away from their help. This was a possibility, and money was put into my savings account. I was told, you must give him a fair trial, but if he hurts you or abuses you, you come home. But give him a year. If he's all right, keep the money. Make good use of it. What a sacrifice they made. This was their life savings. It wasn't much by today's standards, but $500 in 1946 was a great deal of money. I felt better. I had a way back. July 25th, 1946, I said goodbye to Mum, Dad, and my youngest brother in the passageway of our house. Facing forward, not able to look back for fear of breaking down, my brothers, Frank and Ron, and I boarded the bus to the railway station in Raleigh. My trunk had left earlier in the week. My heart broke that day. My brother Ron, tears streaming down his cheeks, ran beside the train, holding my hand till he could follow no longer. Frank, silent, saw me safely to the embarkation point, a large building in London's West End. We checked in. He hugged me. We couldn't speak. There were no words. I don't believe any of us expected to see each other again. A promise to write was all the commitment we could make. And for the first time in my life, I was totally alone. I didn't like it. I could not cry. Unshed tears gathered into a solid lump. July 26, 1946. We, the wives and children of Canadian soldiers, were taken by bus to Southampton. There were women with small children, some had several. I was glad I didn't have any. I don't remember much about that day. I never looked back at England where we set sail. I turned my face to the sea and wept. From the intercom, Gracie Fields was singing, "Now is the Hour." I still weep when I hear that recording. What had I done? Leroy the Black Port came through the rail car calling, "Regina, Regina." This was my stop. Girls had been leaving the train for 3 days and nights. Mile upon mile, the prairie stretched endlessly. Small cities and towns flashed by. I watched from the window, but I never really saw anything. The customs officer in Halifax had smilingly told us we were very welcome and were now Canadian citizens. I didn't care. I was having a hard time trying to remember what art looked like. I had a photograph, but I could not form a clear memory of his face. There were other things to worry about, too. People dressed differently. Girls wore slacks with clothespins snapped on the hems. I couldn't do that. The houses were strange, too. All wood. There was so much sky, and the heat was overpowering. Art was standing on the platform in a new brown suit and a wide-brimmed hat. He was grinning from ear to ear. "Oh, my God," I thought. "Who is this man?" "I know it's the hat. I'll know him without the hat." Art obligingly put his hat on and off. It was no use. He looked different. I did not know him out of uniform. Other war brides must have had the same experience. Art is the most patient of men, and I know he loved me dearly. He had to put up with me. We spent 3 days in Regina visiting friends, eating food I'd forgotten existed, like white bread, thick cold butter, nuts and candy, as much as I wanted. Getting acquainted with art, listening to people talk. Canadians have a nice accent. The hot days of August, the noises from the exhibition crowds, broke for a brief time the grief of parting. I would be all right. I had found my man again. A new land, a new beginning. "Let's go home." Art was ready. It was harvest time. There was hay to haul, a home to get ready for winter, and stoves to buy. Stoves, plural. A home, the stuff that dreams are made of. My home would have a curved driveway, leafy trees, and flower beds filled with the sweet smell of roses and smooth green lawns. I would wear nice frilly aprons, and my floors would gleam with wax. I would be a good wife and have perfect babies. I was happy, too, with the idea that I would never have to go to work in a factory again. We arrived in Nokomis on August 6th, a very hot day. The air shimmered with heat. I was dressed in a grey wool suit, a girdle, and high-heeled shoes. I refused to take my jacket off and spoil my appearance. I was going to meet the family and had to be properly dressed. That day I learned that your eyelids sweat. The family was at the station to greet us, and I was introduced to them all. They were not a large family, and after some handshakes and pleasantries, somebody yelled, "Nell's making dinner, let's go." I was hustled into a khaki green 29 Chevy sedan. My trunk was thrown onto a truck, and amid the sound of yelling and revving of truck engines and honking horns, and that terrible heat, I forgot my homesickness. I knew I would have sad days and nights, but I'd settle down. These people would be my people. That's the house. What do you think? We were 3 miles out of Nokomis when Art asked the question, accompanied by a pointing finger. Where? I couldn't see any house. Art, still pointing, tapped the glass. There. I scanned the horizon. Surely not. All I could see was Hipwood Barn. I don't see it. There. Yes, he was pointing to the building sitting on the top of the hill. That's it, he said. It was a house, all right. Unpainted windows, blank, dirty. The yard, unattended for almost 20 years, overgrown and brown with dead grass. Trees with dead white limbs pointed to the sky. The driveway, cracked in deep, dry grooves like a jigsaw puzzle, circled the house. There was a roofless barn, the windows long gone and broken. It was an empty, lonely place. Dad built this place. Well, Bill, it's going to need me some work, you know, but you'll see. This is one of the best houses around here. Art rambled on. He was home. He had been born in this house. All I saw was dried, a brown, dried up wood, cracked windows, dirt, and desolation. Art pushed open a broken screen door onto a tiny porch. Stops the wind, Art said. It's a good place to keep the slop pail on, too. Keeps the flies out of the house. Art regaled me with stories of flies in the syrup pail and memories of his childhood. The house door was heavy and the lock needed oiling. After much rattling and twisting, it groaned open. Brown, brown, brown. The walls, the ceilings, every room and wall in that house was painted chocolate brown. Old Charlie, Art's dad, told me years later that it didn't show the dirt inside, the paint was cheap. I was hot. I needed a bathroom. My stomach had not yet adjusted to rich food. But most of all, I wanted out of this house. Where's the bathroom? I asked. Oh, you will have to go outside till we can fix something up. I was not sure what he meant, so I said again, I have to go to the toilet. Sure, go behind the garage. There's no one around. I walked out the door and looked around. Where to go? There was a ramshackle square shed north of the house. Garage? And behind that, the drooping remains of an outside toilet. The floorboards were broken and cobwebs hung in all their undisturbed glory. My high heels dug into the broken boards. No, I couldn't go in there. Where? The trees. After much stumbling around, I found a spot where I could not be seen, and after much struggling with a girdle and nylon stockings and high heel shoes plus the mosquitoes, I adjusted to the pleasures of outdoor plumbing. We worked at the house for the next month. First, let's have a clean toilet. Dig a new hole. The old one had been filled in years ago. The old outhouse was scrubbed and calcined white. It was clean. It was also a two-holer. For some unexplained reason, this was important. I never understood why people wanted more than one hole in a toilet. Maybe I reasoned large families had a bearing on it. Maybe they like sharing. Anyway, we had a two-seater next to the house to cover the brown. Next to the house to cover the brown walls and ceiling, we decided to use wallpaper. A local man was recommended, and Bill agreed to do the job. Paper was selected, pale green with dropped ceilings of cream. Bill measured the rooms, and he said, "I'll do it. You just stay out of my way, and I'll tell you when it's finished." We graded Highway 15 the rest of that week. We graded 40 miles and were paid $18 a day for the two of us. We also paid for the gas. As agreed, we were allowed back in the house when the job was finished. I found the rooms beautifully papered. Bill was thanked and paid. My neighbors told me later that Bill only worked when he was weaving drunk. Art had bought chickens and cows early in the spring, and so, undaunted, we covered the gaping hole in the barn with straw, chickens, cows and horses don't mind living together. There was the odd murder of a chicken or two, but nothing to get excited about. Over the years we raised thousands of chickens and turkeys in that old barn. It was torn down and replaced in the 80s. As Art said, his dad built it well. Now, about stoves, they come in a variety of shapes, styles and sizes. We chose a McClary Royal Charm, a Quebec heater, and at least a mile of stovepipes. Mac was a woman hater. He refused to stay alight for me. Art could take a piece of paper, a handful of wood, one piece of coal, and Mac would glow with satisfying heat. Mac was handsome, all black and white enamel. I tried to please him. I would clean the ash out of his belly, lay sticks carefully on puffed up pieces of paper. Mac would blow out my match, sulk, puff black smoke in my face, or better yet, burn so fast, and get the pipes so hot until they glowed red, and I would have to lay wet rags in the firebox and put him out for an hour or so. No, we did not get along. And in the dining room, his cousin from Quebec was also contrary, sulky, dirty, and miserable. I promised them both a quick trip to the junkyard when things improved. What about language? No problem there? Don't you believe it. I was laughed at good-naturedly about knocking Art up in the mornings. I learned that cows had tits, that there are all kinds of sons of bitches, that God damns everything that doesn't work right, that there are lots of holy cows, but best of all, the most descriptive was the word bullshit. It fit everywhere. At first I was totally shocked, but eventually I learned to accept it as pure Canadiana. I even use it when frustrated. I practiced on Mac, and it came beautiful when the dining room ceiling came down during a dinner party. Yes, I was fitting in nicely. I traveled by sleigh, in a wagon box, hitched to Dick and Rosie, who would fart merrily at every opportunity, a 1929 Whippet coupe, and my favorite Alice Chalmers, our little yellow tractor. My family emigrated to Canada in 1947, and once again, Canada, you gathered more of me to you. I had no reason to leave now. I was home. The land was broken up, crops grew and failed, and grasshoppers ate their way through years of my life. The sun burned the earth, and those never-ending winds blew and blew. There were times when I hated you, yet I always loved you, but you were hard to please, Canada. I would like to say we prospered in those early years, but we didn't. The only traveling we did was to the credit union to borrow money. We went broke three times. We had nowhere to go and no money to go with. So we worked where we could. Art worked on the CPR track and cleaned barns. I took in sewing. We did custom killing at Christmas when everyone raised turkeys. We went to Moose Jaw and worked. And we had our babies. But you know what, Canada? We became tough and we survived. We raised three children. All good citizens, you must be proud of them. We bought land, and we never asked for charity. Do you know what you are to me, Canada? You are a beautiful, harsh, loving, giving, taking, hurting, healing build-up of strong, sharing men and women. I am not worrying about distinct societies or Quebec leaving Confederation. We are in the process of growing up. That is all. You will mold us in the way we should go. We just have to be proud of ourselves. It doesn't matter what our ethnic background is. We have proved that this land has men and women ready to die for her. We are one people, a mix of the finest. We are the finest. We are Canadians.